10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby.
Welcome to the Kentucky Derby Countdown Show, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's all street sense drawing away.
It is all Barbaro in a sublime performance.
Giacomo in the final stride to win Derby 131.
Also sponsored by Airdrie Stud, Claiborne Farm, Keeneland Select, Owner View, Ramsey Farm, Spendthrift Farm, Twin Spires, the University of Louisville Equine Industry Program, West Point Thoroughbreds, Windstar Farm, and Express Bet.
And here is the first undefeated winner of the Kentucky Derby since Seattle Slew of 1977. Smarty Jones has done it. Big Brown bounding home to a convincing win in the Rain for the Roses.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby. American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby.
Now here's Mike Penna, Jude Feld, Kurt Becker, and Jeff Bloom.
Days, 10 hours, 32 minutes, and 24 seconds away from the 142nd Run for the Roses. And we welcome you to the Derby Countdown Show, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, the voice of Keeneland Racecourse, Kurt Becker, and retired jockey, now racehorse owner, Jeff Bloom. We are with you on the backside of Churchill Downs, the sun continuing to rise, and boy, what a spectacular setting it is. The Oaks and Derby horses will make their way on the track for their morning gallops and workouts right around 8:30 Eastern time, so about 30 minutes from right now, and they couldn't have asked for a better morning. There was some rain forecast here in the Louisville area, but that has held off. We are looking at, well, partly sunny skies at the moment, and the sun shining down on those iconic twin spires, as many of the media folks that are in attendance, many of the fans who have made their way out to see some of the Oaks and Derby contenders, they are all here and they are all anxiously awaiting their first glimpse of those contenders coming up later on this morning. JT, here we go again, my friend. Day two of the Derby Countdown, and what a morning it is.
Yeah, we've already had some of the Oaks and Derby horses out training this morning. I happen to see Dothraki Queen, who's on the also eligible list in the Oaks. She was out early for trainer Kenny McPeak. Royal Obsession for Steve Asmussen. She galloped really nicely this morning. She was feeling her oats, as they say. She was very rambunctious, looked very good. And we've already had Nyquist go out and do his jog. It was a scheduled jog day for him, so he went out and did two laps of the track, so we're underway, as they say.
Yeah, more people here this morning than were here yesterday morning. We're expecting even a bigger crowd tomorrow morning as we edge closer to that first Saturday in May. Kurt, today is a very special day on a couple of levels. Number one, it is the post-Derby trainer dinner morning. We attended that event last night. We'll tell our listeners more about that momentarily. But this evening, 5 o'clock Eastern, we'll have our coverage of the Kentucky Derby post-position draw, and that is always one of the more highly anticipated events of Kentucky Derby Week.
Yeah, that's where we start getting down to brass tacks, because we
soon find out tonight just exactly what everybody is up against when it comes to the starting position for the Derby. Of course, the spot that nobody ever seems to want is to draw the rail. You know, I texted our colleague Jude Feld here a few days ago, and I went off on a rant. I said, you know, nobody wants the number one post position, and we often talk about how the last time a horse won coming out of the number one post was, what, Ferdinand back in 1986, and that's because you break out of the one hole, and you're practically staring straight into the inside rail. You've got no room to maneuver to your left. I told Jude, I said, you know, the other thing is those stats can also be misleading. You know, nowadays you've got a full gate of 20. So the entire width of that chute at the top of the home stretch is filled. You go back in the days when they had 10 or 12 horses in the race and you didn't have to have an auxiliary gate. They would move the main gate well out away from the rail. So back in that era, the number one starting spot was nothing like it is today. Jude told me to lighten up.
Well, you know, post position to me is about the least thing you could possibly worry about when you're running a mile and a quarter. But, you know, people make a big deal out of it, and I guess that's fine. If I had a horse in the Derby, I would probably, out of defiance, pick post 17 because no horse has ever won from post 17. And I would want to be the first trainer to do that. Besides, it was my father's lucky number, so I would figure that would be the post to draw.
Well, Jeff, you with your Bloom Racing, of course, are entering horses year-round into different races. Not the Kentucky Derby yet. That day is on the horizon, I can tell you that, my friend. But you're entering horses each and every day, and post positions are drawn at random. It's out of your control as an owner, right?
Well, that's one of the hardest things, when something's out of your control. And sort of to Jude's point, post position, the draw itself, a lot more is probably made out of it than needs to be, other than the fact if you do have a horse, for instance, that, say, doesn't have speed and you're going to get covered up a lot quicker than you might want to be, or if you do have speed and you've got more speed to your inside or outside. But, you know, in reality, so many things can happen when those horses break out of the starting gate. The less problems you can have that you can take control of by having a better post position, you know, is definitely something you want to take advantage of. But in the Kentucky Derby, I mean, it's such a unique situation in that there's going to be things happen with horses that haven't happened before in their previous races because there's 20 horses in the gate, and there's a whole pay scenario that's still up in the air because it's the Kentucky Derby. And typically, you know, if you're down on the inside in the 1, 2, or 3 hole, so much can go wrong because horses coming over on you that if you are on the outside, you can at least be in a position to maybe stay out of trouble earlier in the race.
Again, that coverage coming up 5 o'clock Eastern time, 5 to 6 Eastern here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You'll be able to join us on our affiliates across the country, SiriusXM, satellite radio, and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. And that coverage of the post position draw presented by twinspires.com. We'll encourage you to go to our website to see a complete Derby Week schedule and listing of affiliates with that SiriusXM information. In case you're wondering, the post positions that have produced the most winners in Derby history since the advent of the starting gate, which was right around 1930, post 5 and post 10 have each produced 9 winners. Post 15 has produced 5 winners, including last year's Triple Crown hero, American Pharoah. So for what it's worth, Jude mentioned post 17, the only post never to produce a Kentucky Derby winner, maybe the one you don't want, and as we alluded to earlier, Kurt, post 1, no bargain either.
And you know, the other thing, guys, and this was another point in when I went off in my text to Jude last week.
See what I have to put up with? I'm sitting at home minding my own business, and I get this rant about post positions.
And I've got too much time on my hands. So.
Absolutely. Not a lot going on in Altamont. There were no basketball games that week.
But if you look at the chart, the chart, when it lists the post position for the Derby, the chart is always based on it. Like if you're standing at the perspective, as you're next to the rail, looking down the home stretch, the first horse closest to the rail is always going to be listed as post position number 1. Well, you go back and you look at the video of the start of those races. There have been years, because of scratches and so forth, the one horse actually breaks out of post 2 or post 3. Horses from the outside shift down a few. So it just, if you are somebody who is just obsessive about precision on numbers, be really careful about the post position stats.
All right, well, we are off and running with day 2 of the Derby Countdown Show, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy John's. Ron Moquette, who sends out Whitmore in this year's Kentucky Derby, is going to be with us after our first commercial break. We're expecting to be joined by Dallas Stewart. Ken Ramsey going to stop by at some point. He's always a lot of fun. And several other guests throughout the morning as we take you right up until 10 o'clock Eastern on the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy John's on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No, seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I've thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince, the most expensive yearling from the great pioneer of the Nile's debut crop and a top-class juvenile winning the Grade 2 Nashua before his memorable battle with a Clip Champion honor code in the Remsen. At 3, Cairo Prince was simply sensational in the Grade 2 Holy Bull Stakes, making him the early book favorite for the Kentucky Derby.
Cairo Prince has run away! Cairo Prince and Luis Saez with an emphatic win in the Holy Bull!
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince. Think about it.
Strategize, analyze, select. Join Keeneland Select to bet on racing from around the world on your computer, tablet, or smartphone anytime, anywhere. Featuring the best rewards in racing, free pass performances, live video, race replays, and more. Plus, Keeneland Select invests a portion of its profits back into the sport. Join Keeneland Select today and earn a $150 sign-up bonus at KeenelandSelect.com. Dedicated to the sport and dedicated to the players.
Grade 1 winner Data Link by world-renowned sire Warfront. Data Link scored in the prestigious Grade 1 Makers 46 Mile at Keeneland. Then set a new course record in the Grade 2 Monmouth Stakes. With a pedigree free of Mr. Prospector in the first four generations, Data Link is the perfect outcross option. His first weanlings turned heads, selling well above the stud fee. Data Link at Claiborne Farm.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Listening to the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
So what I saw from the backside was a nice, smooth break off away from the pony. He looked to me, and I've heard already that he was clipping off nice 8s and 12. The final time was 102 and 3. I got him galloping out in 128. All that's very nice. But the nicest thing is that time is exactly our one fifth from the time that he went before the Santa Anita Derby. So he seems to be about on the same level. A lot of this is mental, so he's clipping off the work mentally correct. It's typical, especially with a big race like that, you're going to see a horse regress. In other words, they need to rest and recover in that time since the Santa Anita Derby. So he did that pretty quickly. He recovered pretty quickly in the first week. And since then, he's progressed to this point. So we're just glad not to see a continual regression after that first week. He's progressing. That's positive.
That's trainer Keith DeSormo, who sends out Santa Anita Derby winner Exaggerator Saturday afternoon in the 142nd run for the Roses, talking about his progress and what he's seeing from him over the course of the past several weeks since that big win in Arcadia, California. Mike Pennant, Jude Feld, Kurt Becker, and Jeff Bloom with you live from Churchill Downs, edging closer to the time when the Oaks and Derby horses will be on the track to make those further preparations toward the Oaks and the Kentucky Derby. Speaking of the Kentucky Oaks, gentlemen, I think that, and we'll get back to Exaggerator here in just a minute, but I think that we need to touch on the fact that yesterday post positions were drawn for that 142nd running of the Kentucky Oaks on Friday, and a big field, the three-year-old filly set to go, Kurt.
Well, I think folks need to sit down and take a look at Mike Battaglia's morning line, and I think Mike, as usual, is going to be right on the money or very close to it, because with the absence of Songbird, now I will admit, heading into the Oaks for several weeks, my thinking had been, you know, that'll be a good race to watch and enjoy, but probably won't be a great betting race. You're going to have such a solid favorite. Well, with her defection, go through and take a look at this lineup, guys. You're going to see some very prominent trainers, connections that have won this race in the past that on the morning line are double-digit odds and very well could go off at post time at double-digit odds.
Yeah, there's quite a nice field. It's relatively evenly matched. There's some excellent fillies in there, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's really changed now that Songbird has defected.
Yeah, the common discussion is now it's a wide-open race, and there's some actual There's some very nice fillies in this race that would have been competing against Songbird, who, of course, would have been the prohibitive favorite. But it would have been interesting to see with Songbird in the race some of these fillies that appear to be, you know, improving. They're fillies that have shown that they've got talent. You've got fillies that know how to win races. I mean, you know, Weep No More, very impressive win in the Ashland at Keeneland against Rachel Valentina. Some of these fillies look like they can, in fact, get better and better, even had Songbird been in the race. But no question, I think you're going to see the odds board reflect a wide-open race, and you've got a very soft favorite at Sauve de Tou against a group of very, very good fillies.
Might it be a Doug O'Neill, Redham Racing, Mario Gutierrez, Oaks Derby double, because those are the same connections that bring us Nyquist in the Kentucky Derby. They also have number 13 Landover Sea in the Kentucky Oaks, who is 5-1, has been very, very impressive throughout much of her career, but she now has a chance to run without Songbird being in the race, and we saw what happened last time she did that. It was her most recent outing in the Fairgrounds Oaks. She won very convincingly by nearly 5 lengths, Jude. She looks the part.
Yeah, she does, and she's trained very, very well here at Churchill Downs. She looks like a ticking time bomb, really. And, you know, the minute she ditched Songbird, she went right to the winner's circle 1x4. I think she might be an outstanding filly in this race, and it's going to be one of those things where if you can get a price of 5-1 on her, I think it might be time to go to the windows.
Any concern about the number 13 post position with her?
You are obsessed with post position. No, I'm not concerned going a mile and an eighth. She's got some tactical speed. I think she'll get a good trip. I always liked being outside rather than inside, and Jeff can speak to that. But if I had my choice, I would take a farther outside post position over a 1-2-3 anytime, especially in a big race. I mean, you want to give your jockey every chance to put the horse in a position to win, and I think being outside does that.
Yeah, I agree with Jude. I mean, you just have so many more options in terms of being able to dictate and or control the way that the race is going to lay out for yourself in terms of where you're going to finish up or where you're going to be positioned, you know, going into the first turn, for instance, or going down the backside. You just have more control over staying out of trouble. There's a filly in the race, too, that's going to be, you know, you talked about double-digit odds. Dale Romans, who, of course, we talked to yesterday, has a filly by the name of Go Maggie Go. Very lightly raced filly. She's undefeated. She's only run twice, but she's been very impressive in her career, albeit a very short one, but very impressive training yesterday morning over the Churchill Downs main track, and I think she's a very intriguing horse that could be moving forward.
All right, speaking of fillies that will be a price, Jeff, you live in San Diego, and of course I know Richard Baltus trains a horse or two for you. Richard's got a filly in the Oaks who's 20-1 on the morning line, Mocat. She has been keeping pretty good company. She has been finishing on the board behind Songbird in her last couple of starts. She was runner-up in the Santa Anita Oaks. What do you think about her chances?
She's actually a very interesting filly also at double-digit odds there. You know, Richard I talked to for quite a while yesterday morning, and he walked over to me when we got back to the barn there after his filly trained, and he was saying that he's got her about as good as he thinks he can have her, and he kind of sort of whispered to me, you know, watch out, she might make some noise out there. You know, she definitely looks good. She's settled in well here over the Churchill Downs surface, and you're right. I mean, she's kind of below the radar, but if you look at the company that she's been keeping in those races, it's fairly, you know, the high quality fillies that you would expect to see running in a race like this. So she could be another surprise filly to jump up and run big on Oaks Day.
All right, our coverage of the Kentucky Oaks on Friday, 3-6 Eastern time here on the network. Again, check our website for a complete listing of affiliates, SiriusXM information, and to listen worldwide. It's all there for you. HorseRacingRadio.net, as are podcasts of all of our programming, including yesterday's Derby Countdown Show. If you missed any of our interviews with folks like Ricardo Santana Jr. and Corey Lannery, you can go back and check it all out, HorseRacingRadio.net. I mentioned the Derby trainer dinner last night. We heard the rejoin clip from Keith DeSormo coming out of that last commercial break. He was one of the trainers in attendance last night, but really, guys, it was all about Dale Romans. When he stepped up to the podium on stage to do his interview, he really did steal the show. He did. He started off by, he was addressing his comments to Master of Ceremonies, Paul Rogers, of course, the longtime voice of the Louisville Cardinals. And one of the first things he said, Dale comes up and he says, you know, I've been watching the video clips he'd been showing on these big video boards here in this ballroom. He said, you went back, you showed some clips last year of Keen Ice getting cut off in traffic and finishing off the board. You showed Brody's Cause as a favorite in a race finishing off the board. He said, do you want me just to go home now? And then he, his classic line, which he loves to use, he started off by saying, well, an open bar and a live mic, so here we go again. And he said, by the way...
Never a good scenario, well, by the way, for Dale Romans.
No.
And then he followed that up by saying, speaking of Keen Ice, he says he's now in the barn of Todd Pletcher. He had a rather colorful term for Todd at one point.
Yeah, we can't repeat it on air.
No.
But and he said it jokingly.
And he did.
Of course.
He did. He was, yeah. He laughed and winked at Todd as he said it.
Yeah, that's so. One thing, Jude. As a former trainer, the camaraderie among these Kentucky Derby trainers, and we see this each and every year when we go to that dinner. And if people aren't familiar with the dinner, it's a different type of setting. It's a more relaxed setting. The trainers get up. Each trainer in the Kentucky Derby gets a chance to be interviewed and more lighthearted type of questions. And then they'll be asked about their horses and how they're doing. But, Jude, the camaraderie among trainers is it's almost a fraternity, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, coming to the Kentucky Derby, it's kind of that awe before the sacred feeling. You have just an iconic race, and everybody wants to get to it. And once you, you know, have that opportunity, I think it changes your life forever. And, you know, Dale was verklempt last night a little bit talking about his fellow trainers and how supportive they've been to him over the years. And, you know, it's really, really nice when that happens. And in this day and age, horse racing is much more of a business than a sport sometimes, and it can get a little cutthroat. But I think once you get to the Derby, you realize all the hard work that you've put in to get here. And even Bob Baffert, when he made his comments, being the winning trainer of last year's Derby, you know, he said, we all work hard. He had all the trainers stand up. We all work hard. We all, you know, get up every morning, come out to the track and do our thing. And everybody deserves a round of applause. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, that's the point I was just going to make, Jude, was when they brought Bob Baffert up to accept his award for last year's Kentucky Derby win, you know, really what he talked to was all of the trainers are doing the same thing, right? You get up early in the morning and you go through all the rigors and routines that are associated with preparing horses to run in races. And it was that whole discussion that sort of the unspoken word of what all of the trainers recognize, the efforts that go into it. And it was pretty cool to see Bob Baffert get up there and genuinely talk about all that whole group of trainers, the accomplishment of getting the horse to that point of being able to run in the Kentucky Derby. Also interesting in one of Bob Baffert's comments is, you know, one of these trainers, there's going to be a new Kentucky Derby trainer in the room. Let's not forget, Bob Baffert has a horse in this year's Kentucky Derby. So
yeah.
I don't know if that was a Freudian slip or what that was.
He probably doesn't like his horse or Nyquist, evidently.
Well, I, you know, the way I interpreted that comment, Jeff, was more along the lines that here's a guy, Bob Baffert, who is one of only three trainers in history to saddle four Kentucky Derby winners. And only Ben Jones is ahead of those three. He has six. A lot of people now look at Bob as being the godfather of the Kentucky Derby, so to speak, at least among the trainers, right? And so when he gets up there, he is almost speaking for all trainers. And when he says something along those lines that, hey, there's a new Kentucky Derby trainer in this room, almost the passing of the baton, so to speak. That's the way I interpreted
it. Well, keep in mind that in this year's lineup, there are what, only three trainers in this race that have ever won it before. You've got Bob Baffert, you've got Doug O'Neill, and you've got Todd Pletcher. And we are really in a transition era. You go back and look, every single year from 08 through 2014, the winning trainer in the Kentucky Derby was a trainer who had never won the race before. And then that string was broken last year when Bob Baffert got that fourth winner. But we are, you know, we're moving into a different era, guys. I mean, we went through a stretch in the late 90s where you had Dwayne Lucas, Baffert, back to Dwayne Lucas. And we don't see that kind of domination, at least we haven't in the last 10 years or so.
Well, that's what's so unique about a race like the Kentucky Derby. And we were talking about other trainers who have such accomplishments in this industry in every which way, shape, or form, except for, say, the Kentucky Derby. Guys,
yep,
like Dale Romans, Steve Asmussen, just recently elected into the Hall of Fame. It just shows you the craziness of winning the Kentucky Derby, and for a guy like Bob Baffert to have won it as many times as he has. I mean, there's been a lot of good horses that have run in the Kentucky Derby that haven't won. It's an amazing feat to accomplish to win the Kentucky Derby.
Native Dancer, that to me is always the classic example. He went 21 for 22 in his lifetime or whatever it was, and the one time he lost, and it wasn't by much. He lost by just a few inches, but it was on the first Saturday in May.
You know, speaking of the camaraderie among the trainers, one other point to make is when Kieran McLaughlin came up on stage last night, he immediately looked at Dale Romans and he said, "Dale still owes me dinner because I helped him win the Travers last year."
Of course,
Kieran had frosted. Of course, went out there, set the fast fractions along with American Pharoah, and here came the Dale Romans trained Keen Ice to pick up the pieces and get the victory and defeat Pharoah that day. So it was again lighthearted. That's what that event is all about, and it was really a lot of fun to take in. You know, the other line I loved was from Tom Amos when he talked about Mo Tom, and he has been telling anybody that will listen that this horse has a devastating run, that this horse has all kinds of ability, but he hasn't been able to show it because he's had trouble in his most recent races. And he said it's almost like being the only guy in town that has seen a UFO, and you're trying to get other people to believe that you've actually seen it. And nobody will listen to him. We'll see. On Saturday, he may be the smart guy among the group.
It's a great analogy, right? Because it really puts things in perspective for people to understand where he's coming from on that. And he's sort of right. I mean, look, he's so close to that horse. He knows the talent the horse has. And at the end of the day, in horse racing, everything ends up on paper. It's all black and white. How many number ones are in the win column? And you know, so he's got a horse that certainly has the right to show his talent, and he definitely believes in him. You know, another interesting comment I thought was from Keith DeSormo when he got up there and he was talking about the brilliance of Exaggerator. And he admitted, you know, he said, look, our horse had such an explosive kick to accomplish the victory in the Santa Anita Derby, and he was impressive. But he mentioned, look, it was a torrid pace on the front end, and he was the benefactor of picking up the pieces in a race where, you know, speeds just failed. They went out there so quick. But, you know, there were other horses in the race that were laying in the back of the pack, including yours truly with a horse who did pick up some of the pieces, but Exaggerator exploded in such a way, regardless of the torrid pace, that I think it was a little more impressive than he was giving credit for in terms of, you know, the way that the race played out for him.
Are we talking about Diplodocus?
We would be talking about Diplodocus.
Yes.
Who was sitting back there with Exaggerator. And had we moved at the same time as Exaggerator, who knows, right?
I just want to know.
Oh,
I
know.
And if my aunt had testicles, she'd be my uncle.
I'm not even going to use the me seeing a UFO reference to, you'll see, Diplodocus.
Did Michael Rona insert into the call in the colors of the Bloom Racing Stable? That's what I want to know.
He mistakenly did not, Kurt, and I'm glad you brought that up. And don't worry, we're going to have a conversation.
Frank Mirabotti, who said that?
I did like the fact that you got to see Diplodocus barely coming into the picture when they were showing the Exaggerator victory, though, as they were crossing the finish line.
All right, the track is now closed. They are renovating the track, meaning that the tractors are going to come over. They will open it up or harrow that racetrack, and then the Oaks and Derby horses, will make their way onto the track for all of the morning preparations. Jeff Bloom is going to be trackside to bring you an update on how everybody looks on this Wednesday morning as we edge closer to the 142nd Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby. We'll get to a break. We will come back and bring you that segment next on the Derby Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 142nd Oaks and Derby.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horse racing is a major professional sport where you can own your own team without spending millions to play. West Point Thoroughbreds can get you started competing in horse racing partnerships for a fraction of the cost of building a stable of your own. You don't need to know a lot about horse racing. West Point manages your horses. You show up on game day and enjoy all of the fun. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit West Point, T as in Tom, B as in boy.com. That's westpointtb.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
Daredevils love speed.
Daredevil has opened up here in the stretch.
In fact, when I think of his victory in the Champagne, three numbers come to mind. 107.
It's Daredevil with a four-length lead.
You tell me the last horse to win a grade one at two with those kind of speed figures? I can. Uncle Mo. Pretty good company, if you ask me.
Visit WinstarFarm.com.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
The Kentucky Derby Spotlight always shines on the horses hoping to be draped in the famed garland of roses. But on the first Saturday in May 2010, jockey Calvin Burrell also found himself sharing the limelight. Having won the Derby for the first time in 2007 aboard Street Sense, and again 2 years later with 50-1 long shot Mind That Bird, Burrell would look to accomplish the unthinkable in 2010, winning three Kentucky Derbies in the span of 4 years. Nicknamed Calvin Bo-Rail for his exceptional ability to guide a horse to victory along the inside rail, it was fitting that as the field entered the stretch, Calvin would find himself slipping through an opening along the inside.
Final furlong, it's Calvin Burrell and Super Saver in front to in second, Patio Prado down the outside, Icebox is flashing home, racing up the line, Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher and for Calvin Burrell, Burrell's third win in the Kentucky Derby.
Calvin Burrell returned to the Derby winner's circle, tipping his cap and raising his arm skyward to the cheers and admiration of the more than 150,000 fans beneath the Twin Spires. Yet another memorable moment in Kentucky Derby history.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Quarter mile to come. Loud Man and Star Hill, 1-2 off the far turn. Brody's Cause has work to do to catch them. They're coming to the eighth pole. Cards of Stone, fourth. Cherry Wine is fifth up on the outside. My Man Sam is on the grandstand side in sixth. Brody's Cause just keeps grinding away. Cherry Wine is running late on the outside. Brody's Cause at the 16th pole. Chased by Cherry Wine. My Man Sam running huge from last. But Brody's Cause in front. Brody's Cause for Luis Saez to win the Toyota Bluegrass from My Man Sam. And then Cherry Wine further back, Loud Man, 1 minute 50 and 1 5th seconds.
Brody's Cause, one of the Kentucky Derby horses who will be on the track here in just the next couple of moments at Churchill Downs. Welcome back to the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns. Our very own Kurt Becker with the call of the Grade 1 Toyota Bluegrass at Keeneland. That was just a few weeks back, and we'll see if Brody's Cause can duplicate that winning effort coming up on Saturday afternoon. You know, Woodford Reserve is the official bourbon of the Kentucky Derby, and this year they are honoring the Run for the Roses with the release of the 2016 Kentucky Derby commemorative bottle, and that means an awful lot to Chicago native Thomas Allen Pauley, who is a world-renowned equine painter, and he is the official artist of American Pharoah, the Triple Crown winner from 2015, because of the fact that his painting is featured on that Woodford Reserve commemorative bottle. It's a very, very special event, and he joins us now here on the Derby Countdown. Thomas, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much. It is an honor to be part of history.
Yeah, amazing. How did this all come about? What do you remember about getting the call that they wanted you to be the guy?
Well, actually, I remember last year walking through the Churchill Downs. This is my 18th Kentucky Derby, and I was walking through there. I was talking to some photographer friends, and I said, you know, one day I'm going to be in that bottle. And they just looked at me and said, sure. I go, yeah, really, I'm going to be on there one day. I go, you know what, it's going to be next year. And I actually then started pursuing it. So I wrote to them, and they just loved what I did.
Tell me about the picture, Barreling Down.
Barreling Down is actually a photograph that I took during the Woodford Reserve Turf a couple years ago. And I sent them a whole bunch of selections of photographs to choose from and what we were going to use the photo as reference to do the painting. And they really liked that one. And they didn't even know it was from the Woodford Reserve Turf race at that time.
Yeah, that's really cool that they sponsor the race, and then
right.
they chose that picture.
Right.
You can imagine corporate sitting around a desk.
Well, I changed the colors of the horse because they were both dark bay horses, so they didn't stand out. And then they asked me to change the silks, too. And the silks on the gray horse in the front actually ends up being one of the directors of Brown Foreman silks. So he said, hey, if you want to put silks on there, put mine on.
Very cool.
So now they have paintings in his house, by the way.
Thomas, stay with us here. The Oaks and Derby horses are now on the track. We want to go trackside to Jeff Bloom for an update on what's happening. Jeff, what can you tell us?
Yeah, we've got all of the Oaks and Derby horses out here on the track. It's busy time. Motom just jogged past us, going backwards the wrong way to warm up, really striding out well. Just looks the picture of health. I thought Majesto, we've talked about a couple of times, really, really on his toes, but the right way, just keyed up, but really looks fantastic out there and very alert, looking around, but in a controlled way. Outwork just galloping past us, kind of nice regular gallop down near the fence, just a nice regular controlled gallop. Destin, we've talked about, also galloping past us. Destin really, really has looked well the last couple of mornings, you know, really just keyed up, but nice and controlled. I thought Land Oversea, trainer Doug O'Neill's filly, was just the picture of class, standing alongside the pony, essentially posing for the cameras, you know, with her ears pricked and looking at the grandstand, but really just in full control of herself. There goes Mohaman. Mohaman taking a real strong hold, striding out really well on his right lead, galloping past us, going the right way on the track. He schooled over in the paddock just moments ago and came out on the track from the other side, on the main side of the racetrack, just galloping past us, but looks fantastic. Sudden breaking news alongside his pony, the pony rider keeping a good hold of him. Another horse that I thought really stands out so far this morning in terms of the horses training in front of us, was Bob Baffert's horse. He was jogging in front of the pony. The pony staying behind him, but looking good, dappled out, really feeling good on his toes. We talk a lot about horses being on their toes. There goes my man Sam, kind of climbing a little bit, really throwing his head around, trying to get away from the rider a little bit out of control. It looks like once he can get past the frenzy of photographers here, he might settle down a little bit. But so far, overall, all the horses looking really good, and a couple of standouts on the racetrack so far, including Mohaman, who I thought looked really good galloping past us.
Interesting that the Baffert trained Moore Spirit, one of the ones that Jeff picked up on here this morning, second last time out in the Santa Anita Derby behind Exaggerator. Kurt going to try and turn the tables on that rival Saturday.
Yeah, and he's going to have to somehow get back to the form that he showed as a juvenile last year. You know, Moore Spirit near the end of his two-year-old season put up some really impressive speed figures and looked fantastic. He's been competitive this year, but it's as though that so far from his two-year-old to his three-year-old season, he hasn't taken that next step up, so Saturday would be a dandy time for him to do it.
Renowned artist Thomas Allen Pauly with us here as well on the Derby Countdown Show. We were talking about the Woodford Reserve commemorative bottle, which features his photograph of the Woodford Reserve, and it is called Barreling Down. That's the name of the photo, and those bottles now available. Thomas, talk about your interest in horse racing. Where did this begin?
Well, I just want to make a correction. It's actually a painting that I did.
Oh, that's the painting.
That's
okay.
A painting,
oh, I thought
yeah.
You mentioned photograph.
No, I just
okay.
used the photo as a reference for
oh,
my painting.
So. Okay, gotcha. All right.
And your question, how did I get involved with this?
Yeah, where did the interest begin for
Well,
for
it
Thomas
actually happened June 17th, 1978. I remember that day.
Could you be more precise?
Wow.
Yeah.
I was at a friend's house. His dad owned harness horses. He invited all his friends out to the Sportsman's Park, which isn't there anymore, unfortunately. And the horse won. We all got in a winner's circle. And 2 weeks later, I got the win picture, and I decided to do the drawing of his dad's horse. And the horse was Rusty Wynn. And his dad ended up buying the painting or the drawing. And ever since then, I've been painting horses.
So what's your favorite Derby memory?
My favorite Derby memory was my very first one, 1999, with Charismatic. And it was just a beautiful day. And that whole story with Chris Antley. And it just was really, really a great day. And I ended up doing a painting of that horse. And it turns out years, like 12 years later, a guy came over to my studio, ended up buying it, and it ended up being the CFO of Brown Foreman, who owns Woodford Reserve. So it's wow. funny how that works.
Thomas, you've had your artwork on display in your native Chicago. You've been featured here in Louisville during the Derby. I think you've been the actual Derby portrait artist on occasion in the past, if memory serves. And I know there was one year that a collection of your equine art was on display at Saratoga Springs during the Saratoga race meet. But can you pinpoint, of all of these things that have happened, what is the biggest honor that you have had in your career as an artist?
Well, it's funny because last year when I got commissioned as the official artist of American Pharoah, I thought that was going to be my pinnacle in my career. And then all of a sudden the Woodford Reserve bottle came along, and I mean the exposure, I mean from just seeing it in the local gas station to the big gigantic billboard outside Churchill Downs. I mean, it's everywhere, commercials, and it's just a huge honor.
Being a Chicagoan, I have to ask you, Cub guy?
Oh, yeah.
How about the start to the season? Unbelievable.
It's amazing. And what they're doing, the renovation.
It won't last. It's Cubs. It's not going to last.
Well, let us enjoy it.
Well, Thomas, like, we really appreciate you stopping by for a few minutes. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. We'll give you that here in just
a minute. Very
nice. Congratulations.
I want to mention one more thing.
Yeah.
My original painting of American Pharoah was actually in the American Pharoah exhibit, which just opened up on Sunday. So everybody should check out that exhibit at the Kentucky Derby Museum. It's really a cool exhibit.
Nice. And don't ever correct me on my show again. Well done, my friend. Thank you. Congratulations.
Very funny. Okay.
Yeah, good job. Back trackside to Jeff Bloom. Jeff, what's happening?
In front of us now is Trojan Nation, and pretty much same exact scenario as it was yesterday for Trojan Nation, sort of just jumping all over the racetrack, rider having a hard time getting the horse to stay in control. They're trying to jog the horse the right way on the track, but he wants no part of it, sort of looking around. I'll tell you, Exaggerator just went past us a moment ago. Exaggerator could not have looked any better at a full gallop, but a nice controlled full gallop. Mo Tom, again, we talked about yesterday, looks really good on the racehorse. You know, you just wish you'd see a little bit more to the horse. There's just, you know, he's a very light horse, kind of a racy horse, and when you look at his races, when he got bounced around so much, it's amazing to see how resilient the horse is, considering there's not a whole lot of size there. But he was just really relaxed and calm on the track. There goes Brody's Cause. No surprise, Brody's Cause has been just really a pretty horse out there on the racetrack, really professional, really striding out very well. I would say Landover Sea, we talked about a little bit ago when she was standing here posing for the camera. She galloped past us, and she, by far, out of all the fillies training this morning for the Oaks fillies, was just a clear standout in terms of the way she was moving over the track, the way that she was taking a hold of the rider, just really moving out well. More Spirit, talked about before. I thought More Spirit was one of the other standouts, I should say, for the horses training. There goes Mo Tom. Mo Tom really striding out well as he goes past. Mahesto, again, you know, when he went past us for the second time, really well within in control. There goes Whitmore, kind of a blocky, sort of stocky, kind of short coupled horse, you know, just galloping past us. Not, you know, anything overly impressive in terms of the way that he moves over the track, but he's doing fine as he gets over there. You know, another horse I thought too that we didn't see yesterday, Mohaman, not only galloped really well, but jogged all the way down the backstretch from the top of the turn all the way past us, and the rider was just kind of patting the horse on the neck. And you could tell Mohaman, he's been through this dance before and really handling the whole experience well. There goes Mahesto. Like I said before, kind of a light horse, not a whole lot of substance, but very sort of racy looking, on his toes. He's got a handler actually taking him off the track so that way he doesn't bounce around too much. But overall, really impressive collection of horses training this morning.
Jeff, you've used the term striding out well on several occasions, especially when you talk about a horse like Mo Tom, who came past you just a short time ago. First of all, describe what that means for people that might not be familiar with that term, and talk about how important it is to have a horse that's getting over the ground like that.
Yeah, what you want to see is an efficient stride where essentially the horse's feet are just barely coming up off the ground. You want to see them on their correct lead. And so what that means is when the horse is going down the straightaway, you want to see them on their right front lead, meaning the right front foot is extending out further than the left. And when they're in the turns, you want them to be on their correct lead, which would be the left lead, essentially helping the horse lean into the turns. And you'll see just a subtle adjustment when the horses come in and out of the turns. They'll get on their correct leads, like the horse there just did in front of us. I missed the name on that horse. But you want them to be on a correct lead. You want them to be sort of extending out with their stride and have the rider have sort of a long hold on the back of the horse's neck, a little bit of a bow or bend in the horse's neck where they're just got their eyes straight ahead. They're not throwing their head around. You want to see just a nice controlled action between the horse and the rider, sort of having their head stretched out. In fact, Shigoff, really, really stretched out with his head. He'd kind of stick his neck out, but really reaching out with his front feet, and that's the sort of thing you want to see. And in particular, you want to see a horse be on their correct lead, indicating that they're comfortable with the way that they're moving, they're in good shape. There goes Tom's Ready jogging past us, a very fast jog coming off the track. So overall, most of the horses, as I said, were really in good shape this morning, getting over the surface.
Well, Jessica Bedard, thanks you for your report on Exaggerator and Mohamed. And Mohamed really has picked it up the last couple days, huh?
Yeah, I thought Mohamed really looked the part this morning. I think more than anything else, he looked very comfortable out there. I mean, the horse is a consummate professional in terms of knowing what to do when he's out there on the racetrack, but the way that he was galloping past us in a very controlled fashion, taking a very nice hold, not trying to run off, but really just getting along with the rider, and in particular, the way he came off the track, I thought, you know, he really looks like he's geared up and ready for a big run. He was just striding out very nicely, going across the track alongside the pony horse, when he was jogging off the track.
Jeff, you couldn't have a better vantage point standing right there on the rail. I just saw Creator walk past you. He almost stepped right on you, actually. And then I can't tell who's coming by now, but who's that horse that just walked past?
I think that was a Gunrunner,
yeah,
that was just behind
Creator.
Also for trainer Steve Asmussen. Of course, Steve on the pony horse alongside the gray horse Creator. And Creator really walking in a calm fashion, just sort of like cruising off the racetrack, whereas Gunrunner is definitely a little bit of a handful. He does have a pony alongside him with the strap to make sure that they can keep that horse in control, but that horse is just about ready to get up on his hind legs, it looks like, and the rider's definitely got a handful there getting that horse off the racetrack.
Hey, getting so close to those horses, does it make you want to get a leg up?
Yeah, you know, there was a couple of times when I sort of tried to crawl under the rail, but I was grabbed by producer Michelle Penna here to make sure that I just kept the microphone in my hand.
You're a retired jockey. You don't have to crawl. You can just walk underneath it, can't you?
I pretty much can. I'll tell you what, though. There is something to be said about being able to get on the back of a racehorse here in front of the Twin Spires. It does make you want to get back out there and do it, especially when you're looking at so many of these beautiful thoroughbred racehorses that are running in the Kentucky Oaks and in the Kentucky Derby.
Jeff, last night at the Derby trainer dinner, I know those of us who were seated at your table had a chance to do some reminiscing, and one of the names that came up was the name of the late Eddie Gregson, who trained Gato del Sol, who won the Kentucky Derby back in the early 1980s, and you were telling us, if I understood correctly, you were never necessarily on that particular horse, but yet you had a chance as a young man to do some exercise riding, worked for Eddie in the mornings. What does it mean? Do you recall, did Eddie ever talk about winning the Kentucky Derby and just what that meant to him?
Well, you know, Eddie wasn't the kind of guy that was going to, toot his own horn or talk a lot about what happened in the past. I know it certainly meant a lot to Eddie to be able to win a race like that. But, you know, as we discussed last night, Eddie, in my opinion, one of the classiest individuals you could ever meet in the game of horse racing. And really, the accomplishments in his short career as a trainer were many. He had a lot of good horses, and more than anything else that stands out for me in terms of Eddie Gregson, in addition to winning the Kentucky Derby, was how he treated his staff and the horses. I mean, his horses lived in stalls that were as cush and posh as you could imagine. They were padded well, and they were fed properly, and really looked after in ways that was a little bit ahead of his time. I mean, he really treated the horses well as the people that worked for him. He appreciated everything that his team did for him and really gave credit to everybody around him. He was just a wonderful person to work for, and I had the fortunate opportunity to get on the back of a lot of good horses during that time.
what a great legacy that someone leaves. You know, it's wonderful to be remembered as a Kentucky Derby winning trainer, but when you hear Jeff describe how Eddie's staff perceived him, no better legacy that a trainer can leave than that.
No, absolutely not. And you heard Jeff talk about all the big name horses he's been on. It's been quite a ride for Jeff Bloom. Jeff, back to you.
Yeah, most of the Oaks and Derby horses are either making their way off the track or have already gotten off the track. Standing here next to trainer Richard Baltus, who, of course, has the filly Mocat in the Kentucky Oaks, and she's out here for a jog. And according to Richard, he likes the way that she was moving out this morning. I believe she's just going to be jogging today.
Yeah, he's trying to find an interview there. He was trying to get Richard to talk with him. Richard, a bit microphone shy. There he goes.
All right. We got Richard. Now, Richard, your filly Mocat is now on the track. Is she just jogging today, Richard?
Yeah, jogging 2 miles.
And you're...
A couple of real strong gallops the last couple of days, so maybe did a little too much with her. So I was just kind of keeping her loose.
So you decided not to breeze the filly over the Churchill Downs surface, if I remember correctly. You got a breeze in right before you left Santa Anita.
Yeah.
What was the decision-making process there in terms of not getting her a breeze over this track?
I think the timing and the flight arrangements and, you know, she worked at Santa Anita. She worked a good 6 furlongs and 13. She galloped out 7/8 and 26 out of a mile and 42 or something like that. So I thought that was more than enough for her, you know, and she had 2 real strong gallops the last couple days, and I think we're ready to go.
There's obviously a lot of good fillies in this race, but it's a wide open race now with the defection of Songbird. Originally, I believe you weren't necessarily pointing to the Kentucky Oaks, but then the final decision was made, I guess, when you heard of the Songbird defection.
Yeah, we were going to come if she ran, you know, she ran second to Songbird last time and she was closing and it wasn't really her track. So we were going to come anyway, take a shot because it's only one Kentucky Oaks, you know, and, you know, any good placing here, first, second, or third is a lot for the horse and the value of the horse. And I think, you know, the mile and an eighth distance is good. And actually, when she ran second the other day, I mean, Flavian, the jockey, he said she wasn't handling the track. So who knows?
You never know. You're in it. Got a shot. Good luck, Richard, and your filly looks great out there.
Richard Baltus and Mocat going in the Kentucky Oaks. He was with Jeff Bloom there moments ago. We're going to get to a short break. We'll come back. Ron Moquet, who sends out Whitmore in the Kentucky Derby, he's going to be with us next. This is the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince, the most expensive yearling from the great pioneer of the Nile's debut crop and a top-class juvenile winning the Grade 2 Nashua before his memorable battle with Eclipse Champion Honor Code in the Remsen. At 3, Cairo Prince was simply sensational in the Grade 2 Holy Bull Stakes, making him the early book favorite for the Kentucky Derby.
Cairo Prince has run away! Cairo Prince and Luis Saez with an emphatic win in the Holy Bull!
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince. Think about it.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The Big Bet is back. ExpressBet's 25K Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes once again puts you in position to make a life-changing bet. One grand prize winner receives $25,000 to bet on a horse in this year's Preakness Stakes, along with a VIP trip to Pimlico so they can cheer their horse to the wire in person. Plus, 50 second prize winners each receive a $100 ExpressBet wagering voucher. Ready to get started? It's free and easy to play. Simply log into your ExpressBet account and register today. You'll earn an entry for every bet you make with ExpressBet through May 7th. Not an ExpressBet customer? No problem. Open a new account using promo code TC2016 and earn a $125 sign-up bonus when you wager $100. And remember, you can bet the Triple Crown along with all of your other favorite tracks on ExpressBet. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. Visit ExpressBet.com for details and restrictions. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Kentucky Oaks, 142.
Princess of Fillmore for a shock at 36 to
the one in the Kentucky Oaks.
She is unstoppable. She is uncatchable. She is uncappable. She wins the Kentucky Oaks.
Lovely Maria and Kerwin Clark have won the Kentucky Oaks.
Kentucky Oaks 142. Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information or to listen live.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
My aspirations when I was a kid growing up and I started riding was just beat my brother for leading jockey one day at LeBois Park. And I suppose every kid growing up, they want to play in a Super Bowl or a World Series or drive in the Indy 500 or whatever. Me, it was just to be a leading rider somewhere. And then when I got the chance to ride in my first Kentucky Derby in 1985, I was like, man, this is pretty cool. And after riding in my first one, I said, nah, this is not good enough. I want to win one of these things. So to win the first one and then a second and a third was more than I ever could have expected. But I'd like to get one more.
That's Hall of Fame jockey Gary Stevens, one of three jockeys in the race to have won three Kentucky Derbies. He's looking for number four on Saturday afternoon. He'll ride the Bob Baffert-trained More Spirit in his quest for four. We'll see if he can pull it off. You'll hear that live coverage exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Our coverage on Saturday begins 8 a.m. Eastern with our Equine Forum program. We're back at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with all of our race coverage. You'll hear the Derby undercard stakes, and then we'll segue into that coverage of Kentucky Derby 142, produced in partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One. Mike Pennett, Jude Feld, Kurt Becker, and Jeff Bloom with you live from Churchill Downs on this Wednesday morning, edging closer to the first Saturday in May, and one trainer who is anxiously awaiting that afternoon is trainer Ron Moquette, who is the native of Fort Smith, Arkansas. He'll be saddling his second Kentucky Derby starter on Saturday afternoon when he sends out Whitmore, who has been very, very consistent, looking to get over the top and crack through in the Kentucky Derby Saturday afternoon. Ronnie, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, always happy to have you on board. You know, we were talking earlier about camaraderie with trainers, and we saw that last night at the trainers' dinner. And you had a comment where you said that you grew up idolizing a lot of the trainers that were sitting in the room with you and looking up to those guys. But now you're competing with them, and all you want to do is, well, you used a term, but I'm going to say all you want to do is beat them now.
Yeah, that's, you know, the thing is you want to be your idol, and then you want to beat your idol. And I have nothing but respect for all the horsemen. I know what their job is, and I know how hard they had to work to get where they're at. And, you know, but I would lie if I wasn't saying that every day I wake up wanting to beat them. And, you know, with the right opportunity and the right horse, I think we'll get there one day.
Whitmore was just on the track with all the other Derby horses. What can you tell us about him? How's he doing?
He's blossomed at the right time. He's a good-looking horse. He's very thick-made. I see Majesto and I see Moyhan and all these guys go by. He doesn't resemble as much, and either I brought the wrong horse or they did, because we look different. You know, ours looks like, you know, a running back, and theirs looks more like a wide receiver. But we'll just see what the recipe calls for.
Well, he's a horse that has won two sprints but hasn't won going long, but he certainly finishes like he can get the mile and the quarter. Have you changed anything about him in your training to help him do that?
You know, all we're trying to do, every race we run is going to help us figure him out and him figure out where he wants to be. He's a learning horse. The thing that from the outside looking in, if you didn't know the way the track plays at Oaklawn, or if you just turned in to watch that one race or whatever, you wouldn't give as much credit for what he's done. If you played Oaklawn every day, you'd see that you go three wide at any point in the turn. You usually don't finish with the same zest. And if you rush up and make a big middle moves are dead at Oaklawn because the track is about 5 to 7 inches thicker two paths off. But that being said, we wanted to be closer last time. And we lost all opportunity whenever Cupid come over and we clipped heels and had to pull up. So our plan was well prepared, but it went right out the window 30 seconds after the race started. So then we were recovery mode. And I was very happy. You know, what we say is whenever something doesn't go our way, we recover up and become second or third. When some of these other guys, whenever it don't go their way, they run last.
Yep.
Or fifth or whatever. So he doesn't have to have everything go his way, and he needs to keep maturing. But we're okay with where we're at.
Ron, as I recall, you're an Arkansas native, and the name Whitmore on this horse. You were telling us the background at the Derby trainer dinner last night. Tell our listeners where the name Whitmore comes from.
I played basketball and went to high school with a guy named Wilbur Whitmore, and it's weird. We grow up and we go our own directions, and I don't talk much to Whit or his family for that much. I'm never in my hometown. But whenever I got this horse, I thought to myself, you know, he's a freakish athlete, and he reminded me of Whitmore. So I called him up out of the blue and had to chase through channels to get his number. But I called him and said, hey, Whit, how would you feel if I named a horse after you? And, of course, he didn't know what all that entailed, but he was like, sure, that's cool, I'll do it. I said, I'm going to make you famous. We're going to the Kentucky Derby. This was long before we ever made our first out. This was right after I gelded him because he was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Whit or Whitmore?
Yeah. I don't think I want to get near Whitmore, with the real Whitmore, with a knife. He's a bad man, too.
We're talking with trainer Ron Moquette on the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy John's. We're going to continue this visit right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ronnie, you get jockey Victor Espinoza in the irons, last year's Triple Crown hero. How did this come about? And a pretty good pickup, my friend.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes the stars align for you, and that's what we're going with. You know, we were satisfied with IRAD, and we kind of thought there would be a problem should Chad get a bunch of horses in there, even though IRAD had expressed to us that he definitely wanted to ride our horse. So we went with what the jockey was telling us, and I basically thought that at the end of it he had to choose between riding a 20-1 horse in the Derby and leaving Chad on the sidelines, or maybe run the risk of leaving Chad on the sidelines at Saratoga with 150 good steam engines.
Yeah.
So I think that if the listeners are playing into a lot of the, well, IRAD chose the best horse, I think IRAD chose the best opportunity for IRAD, and I don't begrudge him. That being said, it kind of helped us in the way that we'd have been tickled with IRAD, but at the same time, we were very, very happy to have Victor.
Were you surprised that he was open,
Victor? He was actually, there was a bunch of people entertaining him. So whenever we found out he was open and his agent reached out to us first, it made us feel good. You know, I mean, we were... You know, that's, if LeBron James wants to be on their team, you let him play.
Right, yeah. So you give him the ball.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that this is horse racing, and I love and respect jockeys for all they do. But, you know, a good horse is going to win the race, and it'll whoever gets the best trip. But a slow horse will never win a race. I don't care who you put on them. So we've got a good horse, and now we've got a good jockey. Now if we can get a good trip, we'll get hopefully good results.
Yeah, well, that's cool, though, to have somebody that has that talent and that knowledge of the Kentucky Derby, and of course, unbelievable record. But this horse, he's maybe a little trickier to ride than some. Has Victor come to you? Have you had conversations? Have you discussed strategy and things already?
Victor is actually very studious. A lot of these guys just say, I'm very good, get me on, we'll get there. And Victor come to my office, and we sat there and watched every race. And I said, see, he's good inside. See, he liked this. He loves competition. When we're going to the gates, he may scream and cry and do different stuff to put on a show, but he's smart once he gets in. You don't have to get nervous. And this is what Mike said. This is what IRAD said. And, you know, he was very open to listening to everything about the horse and studying it, and then I'm sure he'll go with whatever his natural reaction is.
Ron, as far as the dynamic of owners and trainers, one of the things that fascinates me about this game is you've got the trainer, who's with the horse and sees the horse on a daily basis, and then you've got the owner who will occasionally have his own thoughts and say, well, look, but I'm the owner. I'm the guy that's paying the bills. The ownership group on Whitmore, have they given you the leeway that you need to manage this horse as you see fit coming up to this race?
Yeah, I own half.
That helps. So,
but my racing partnership owns half. But the reason that Bob LaPenta and Harry were allowed to buy half, and I say that because there was other people suiting us to try to buy for actual more money. But Bob LaPenta and Harry are horses first. And, you know, in this game, a win percentage doesn't tell the whole story. And sometimes you got to do right by a horse. And in our stable, it's the priority. And the reason that they're with me right now and we're going on this ride is because they've always shown me that no matter what, they'll let me do what I think is best for the horse. And that's a great feeling. So I applaud them for them allowing me to do my job.
Ronnie, rewind the clock to last year's Kentucky Derby. Your first Kentucky Derby starter, far right. What was that experience like for you?
Unbelievable. It was like I got cold cocked because I wasn't ready for what that was. You know, I know the Derby's a big deal. You know, I've been one of the guys that was inconvenienced to not get to train and, you know, thought, well, what are all these people dragging coolers across the parking lot and scaring my horse? But I wasn't ready for the onslaught of people coming up to you in an airport or coming up to you at a ball game. So
did that happen?
Kind of stuff. Oh, man. Yeah.
In the airport?
Yeah.
Really?
In several airports. You know, that was I blend in. I'm not Bob Baffert. And I don't have, you know, I'm not Pletcher or Asmussen or Lucas or any of these household names. So when someone comes up to me and when you're flying into Saratoga at the, what's it called? What's that airport?
Albany.
Albany. A guy comes up to me and goes, you know, I bet on you in the Arkansas Derby. At that time, we didn't know American Pharoah was American Pharoah. We thought he was just a good horse that had a couple of decent trips.
Yeah.
And he said, I was like, man, I got deflated that day. And he's talking to me about that. And then when we were at, I went to California to look at a horse, and a guy comes up showing me the horse. He goes, hey, how's Far Right doing? I'm like, wait, who are you and how do you know me? You know, that's a little unsettling, but it's cool. And for my horse to get the credit and to get the acknowledgments is really, really fun.
What was your first walkover like?
It was all that, man. I've walked I've walked up with a lot of big stuff, and I can tell you this, you haven't lived until you feel the energy go through your chest and the crowd and the buzz and all. I don't know what it is. It's like walking into a prize fight. Everybody's looking at you, and they're all wanting you to either do good or do bad, but they're all interested in how you're going to do. And to have that many people across the world staring at you is awesome.
Ron, this being your second opportunity to run in a race like the Kentucky Derby, how early in the process when you're around these babies do you get a feel for a horse where you can say, you know, I think I really got a shot where come that first Saturday in May when the horse is a three-year-old, this is one of those horses that might be that kind of horse?
Well, the short answer is you think that if the afternoons and the will match the ability and that they show you in the mornings, you got a shot. But until the light comes on, until, you know, you go over there and you lead them over, you never really know. I've had some horses that were morning glories that would go out there and tell everybody how tough they were at 6:30 in the morning, but at 4:00 in the afternoon, you couldn't find them with a search warrant.
Yep.
And but whenever they do that and they go over there and you still don't know if you're going to get there, but you feel like if everything goes your direction, you've got some ability.
How much, Ron, does your phone start ringing as a trainer once you've had a horse run in the Derby like last year? You've got another horse back in the Derby this year. Is that, obviously it's a resume builder, but does that lead to new clients, folks calling up and saying, hey, Ron, I'd like you to train a horse for me?
Well, here's the problem, is I've always said that I've made fun of trainers with hundreds of horses, and I said that I don't care how good you or your assistant are, you can't manage 100-something horses to get the most out of every one. The job that Steve Asmussen and Bob Baffert and Todd Pletcher do is unbelievable. I'm just not equipped for that. I like to touch every horse every day, and I like to spend individuals. So I said, on many records, occasions on open record, I do not want that big. So I actually had people on a waiting list to come in because, you know, it's like a restaurant. We're sold out. You'll have to wait.
I love that. So. That's a class. That's fantastic. I love that.
Well, it was hard because I struggled so long to get any owners, and I told myself that I was going to stick with a certain number. And then when certain owners that you grow up, you know, man, I wish I had horses for them. And they're calling you going, hey, I want to send you six. You go, well, I can't. I'm full. And that's kind of mind-blowing.
What is your number?
My number's 45.
Wow.
It started out at 40. And then what happened was, as I told myself that, you know, Asmussen told me one time, he said, you know, Curlin was like number 104 or whatever, or 96 or whatever. He said, you're limiting your chances when you do that. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to go up just a little, but I'm not going to go up to where they can't all be under the same roof whenever we're serious training. If we're jogging somewhere, that's fine. And if we're shipping to run, you know, three or four in a weekend, that's fine. But I like to have them all where they can, I can cook their meals, you know.
Yeah. Maybe if Whitmore wins the Kentucky Derby, that building or that roof that they sit under will just happen to grow.
Yeah.
And so now you can have 60 or 70 horses under the same
roof. The waiting
roof.
List is going
to
grow.
Well, it's going to be hard not to be a hypocrite, I can tell you that, because you want to train the good horses. And when someone leads you a good horse and you go, you know, I wake up every day hoping to be in these kind of races. And I get here early as all get out and I do all the stuff. And you'd hate to think that your stall would be occupied by 7,500 non-winners of two, and here could come a tappet out of We'll Take Charge's sister.
Yep.
You would be like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I can't. I'm not going to be able to take your $4 million horse because
we'll
I've got this
archery. We'll put you on the waiting
list. Yeah.
Right. We'll add you to the waiting
so
list.
So we'll have
priority
to see
on that list.
We'll have to see how that stays.
It's time to ship the 7,500 non-winners and two somewhere else.
Yeah.
Let a smaller trainer have a nice horse.
That's
well,
right.
You've heard Ron use boxing analogies on a couple of occasions throughout this interview, and I always like to remind people you're a former boxer. And, of course, looking to throw the knockout punch on Saturday in the Kentucky Derby. What's the winning combination? A little jab, cross, hook, uppercut? What is it?
Well, for me, it was just dance until they got tired. But I always tell people, whenever you talk, like I play any kind of sport, I want to win it. I don't care if it's pick up basketball with my grandkids. I want to win. And I'm playing hard to win. And I'll respect you till tomorrow and the next week and yesterday. But when we're playing, I see nothing but want to beat you. And that's what boxing is. And that's what horse racing is. We can ride down the road, and me and Steve Asmussen and I or Zito or any of these guys will go to breakfast. And when we leave, we're plotting to beat the other one. And, you know, the difference is I guess the one similarity is you can get a butt whooping in either sport thinking you're going to win. So you got to be prepared for humility.
Go get it done on Saturday, will
you? Thank you, guys. Well, you'll see a happy guy. I might do a dirt angel if we win.
We're going to hold you to that. We're going to hold you to that. That would be a first.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Well done. Good luck.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Ron Moquette.
Does he get a gift?
Horse Racing Radio Network. He already look at this.
Oh, man, wait.
Settle down, Kurt. Yeah. Well, he didn't want you to miss getting your tie from Embrace the Race.
When Kurt heard you were a boxer, he wanted to make sure that
wow.
You left here
he's
in the right frame
of mind. Practicing to be Santa Claus.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, don't forget, by the way, speaking of gifts, if you are going to be heading over here tomorrow, stop by our tent on the Backside Media Center. You can come by and pick up a copy of Constellation Magazine, which is put out by Windstar Farm. And each of these magazines that are at our table, well, we have some that are signed by trainer Todd Pletcher, some that are signed by Triple Crown winning Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. So make sure you come by. They are all free. Come grab one if you're going to be out here tomorrow morning making the trip to Churchill Downs. We'll get to another break. We'll come back with more on the Derby Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 142nd Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwich, is that speaking?
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What'll we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello,
boss. Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr. for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
Don't miss your opportunity to attend the next Thoroughbred Owner Conference being held at Santa Anita Park, October 31st through November 3rd, the same week of the 2016 Breeders' Cup Championships. Enjoy a great lineup of speakers and topics, plus be part of the post-position draw for the Breeders' Cup Classic, as well as the Breakfast Marquee and Clocker's Corner. And to cap it all off, your conference registration also includes reserved grandstand seating for both days of the Breeders' Cup. The Thoroughbred Owner Conference, October 31st through November 3rd, at Santa Anita. Register now at ownerview.com.
Malibu Moon is a horse you can believe in because of his pedigree and his looks and because of the ability that he's shown winning this maiden race. You can see he was a good horse. The reason I love Malibu Moon is that he has produced winners and stakes winners at every level. In our opinion, the best stallion in Kentucky was AP Indy, and he is AP Indy's best son at stud. He is a horse that you can believe in because he's done it at every level.
Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington-area Jimmy John's on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Destin and Castellano. They'll take first run at the leader as they turn for home 3/16 of a mile to run. Brody's Cause still has about 12 lengths to make up. Lannery swings him to the outside, but he's still far back. A furlong to run. These two will dispute it. Destin on the outside. Outwork is there toward the grain, and they're locked in battle down to the wire. It's Destin on the outside. He's going to better the two. Destin, Outwork, very gamely for second. 5 lengths further back, Star Hill third. Rafting was fourth. Brody's Cause off the board as the favorite. Running time on the board, 142.82 in the Tampa Bay Derby.
Richard Grunder with the call of the Tampa Bay Derby. Destin getting the victory that afternoon for trainer Todd Pletcher. He's back in action Saturday in the 142nd run for the Roses. Of course, Destin and Todd Pletcher hoping to pick up that second victory in the Kentucky Derby. If Todd could pull it off, he has started several horses, but only that one victory would super savor to his credit, and hoping that Destin or Outwork, the Wood Memorial winner, can give him number two. Mike Pennant, Jude Feld, Kurt Becker, and Jeff Bloom, we are back with you on the backside of Churchill Downs. The clouds now starting to build in. We are expecting some rain later this morning and throughout the day. The forecast for Oaks Day, gorgeous. Temperatures in the mid-70s, plenty of sunshine. Derby Day, even better. Low 80s and lots of sunshine. No rain in the forecast. Should be a fast main track and a firm turf course for the running of the Oaks and the Derby. You can visit our website, horseracingradio.net, for a complete broadcast schedule, listing of affiliates, and SiriusXM information. And, of course, to listen worldwide, it's all there at horseracingradio.net. One of the more popular guests, JT, that we have on the program throughout the year is our good friend Ken Ramsey from Ramsey Farm. He's a native of Kentucky, grew up in Artemis, and he sends out Oscar-nominated in this year's Kentucky Derby. He's going to be a bit of a long shot, but, hey, stranger things have happened, my friend. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be back on. I'm a little sorry to hear your forecast about what a beautiful day is going to be Saturday.
Were you praying for
yeah,
rain?
It would enhance my horse's chances. That have been a little sloppy out there. But, hey, you take whatever it is. We have no control over that.
Yeah. Well, look, this is the horse that won the Spiral Stakes, yes, at Turfway Park. So he's coming in somewhat under the radar, but that's okay. Wouldn't this be appropriate if you were to get your first Kentucky Derby with Oscar nominated?
It would, especially since as far as I know, it's only about the second horse that's been claimed to run in the Kentucky Derby. The first one was Oscar nominated, which I lost for $20,000 to and he subsequently went on and won two grade ones. So then yeah. I came in with this one with $75,000. So little more pricey, but hey, it's the fourth kitten that Joe has been in the Derby. Maybe the fourth time will be Charm. Not the third.
What did you see about this horse that attracted you to Cleveland?
Well, but he's by Kitten's Joy. Then I had a little flashback because the farm that bred him, the Ammermans, we got a call from them after he was born, Oscar nominated. Said, got a real nice foal. We like him, and we'd like to breed mare back to Kitten's Joy again. So we'd already approved the first one, no-brainer. We bred her back a second time. And I was astounded when I saw him running for $75,000 up at Belmont. And he only had two starts and ran fourth in each one of them, not beating badly against the good fields. I checked out who he'd run against. So I thought he was a good claim for $75,000, had his future in front of him. Loved the pedigree, had the Northern Dancer Nixon, we all like. So he won by 4.5 that day and hadn't been back in a claiming race since.
My brother actually purchased the dam of Oscar nominated for the Ammermans. And so that's how I kind of put two and two together, with the Kitten's Joy thing. But I didn't know if you saw something like it in one of his races that made you think, wow, this horse really can run.
No, and also I knew the connection. Billy Mott used to train for me. Matter of fact, he used to train Kitten's Joy's mother, first kitten. Kitten's first, named after my wife.
Yep.
So it was a good store to shop at, and I happen to know that Billy, a lot of times, if one is not running all that well, he'll say, he used to say to me, and I remember it, let's give him a race and nobody claim the horse today and give his confidence built back up. Then we won't run him for claiming anymore. So that was kind of back in my mind, too. He's giving this horse a confidence builder. Nothing wrong with the horse. So it turned out to be a good claim, and I would assume that we've changed the horse's path. I sincerely doubt that Billy Mott would have put him in the Derby if he'd have kicked
him. That was the curious thing. I mean, if you look at the running line of the horse, and like you say, it was a good spot to maybe build the horse's confidence up, but certainly the horse looked like he had every right to improve. You know, he was just kind of getting started. I'm interested, were you guys the only claim in for the horse that day?
We were. Of course, I told the other people, I said, look, I put a claim in for him because I knew you'd rather me have him than anybody else. figuring it'd be a half a dozen in. But it turned out nobody wanted to put up the 75 for the Kitten's Joy.
Good call on your part.
Well, sometimes you get them right, sometimes you don't. That time was right spot on, as they say in England.
So now your $75,000 claim is going to cost you another $200,000 to run in the Derby.
Well, instead of costing, I consider it an investment.
I see.
Because I probably wouldn't even be on the show if I didn't have him in.
There you go.
And that in and of itself, there you go. Yeah.
It's already paying dividends. And I don't think it was that much of a gamble. I wouldn't say it was an investment. It's maybe more like speculation. But I think the horse will finish in the top 10. The distance is not going to be a problem. He's out of a theatrical mire. Never run on the dirt, but Mike tells me that this horse trains better on the dirt than any of the Kitten's Joys has ever had. So who knows? I'm going to predict to be in the top 10.
You know, you picked up, your stable picked up, you had a lot of momentum during the second half of the Keeneland Spring meet. A little quiet the first few days, but as we moved deeper into the meet, all of a sudden, those red and white Ramsey silks started showing up in the winner's circle time and again, and congratulations on yet another leading owner title at Keeneland.
Domination.
Domination. Unbelievable. Winningest owner in the track's history in every category, you might say. And Ken, as far as we looking into the Derby, momentum is on your side right now as far as the stable goes. So how about it? Carry that momentum into Saturday?
I think so. In other words, Kitten's Joy had an absolute unbelievable weekend last weekend. We ended up winning with a first-time stake winner called Smoke'em Kitten, who had previously set the course record down at Gulfstream Park, and he led every step away in the Miami Mile, grade 3 race for $100,000. But more importantly, what happened at Newmarket over in England. Sheikh Mohammed came in and paid $350,000 for a Kitten's Joy that Helen Groves had bred. We loved the horse, and I had my vets check him out. And most I ever paid for a horse my entire life was $240,000. And it turned out he couldn't outrun a fat man going downhill. But we loved this Kitten's Joy as a yearling, so I went to $285,000 on him. And Mark said, you want to go more? And I said, no, that's enough. So no matter what I would have bid, I had no idea that Sheikh Mohammed was bidding against me. So he got the horse for $350,000. So he takes him over to England, and he has two Kitten's Joys in a race. Sheikh Mohammed likes Kitten's Joys. The other one off the favorite because he had won, I believe, four straight, but hadn't been out in about a long time. The other horse, one that went off 14-1, named Hawkbill, won the prep over there for the English Derby. And Sheikh Mohammed was there along with John Ferguson. And it was very interesting because his brother had paid $1,000,001 for a Tappet who's in the same race, and he ended up finishing sixth. So very good news on Kitten's Joy over in Europe if he can keep on going. Yeah.
Wow.
So I think it'd be good advertising if I could win the Derby, the Kitten's Joy, and His Highness Sheikh Mohammed would, you know, win the English Derby with the Kitten's Joy. That'd be kind of a grand slam, wouldn't it? Even if it is just two of them.
That would be big. That would be big.
Well, we keep mentioning the name Kitten's Joy. And for people that are listening that may not be familiar with the reasoning behind that, let's face it. Kitten's Joy, a perennial leading stallion. He stands at Ken's Ramsey Farm in Nicholasville, Kentucky. But, Ken, the thing that amazes me about Kitten's Joy is not just about turf horses. He gets dirt horses as well. But he's been able to stay at the top of that list and among the leading sires year in and year out. What's the reason for all of his success?
For the past 3 years, he's the only horse ever that led the turf for three consecutive years, and he's ahead this year. It's the genetics. It is the genetics because his first five sires are all champions. And I'm not going to name them off here. And the dam, the first three dams are all grade one producers, are grade one winners himself. So the gene pool with Sadler's Wells and all those good horses in there, Northern Dancer, it just coming out. So the way we matched him up with Roberto on the bottom side, the Lear fan. So he's bred on the same cross at Galileo and Frankel and those horses over in Europe. That's why they like him over in Europe.
Ken, it's got to be gratifying to you. It's very difficult to make a stallion. Everybody knows that. And you guys supported the heck out of Kitten's Joy. You believed in the horse, and certainly it's worked out. It's got to be a whole different scenario now when you look this many years later with the success of Kitten's Joy and the fact that now it's not all on you to bring mares to this horse to get the word out.
Well, I think his future, his best may yet be to come because, like, Sheikh Mohammed paid $350 for that, and then he bred six mares to him and his brother year before last and six last year. He only sent two back this year, so maybe he'll increase it after what happened over in England. But it is gratifying to hit the jackpot, so to speak. He's our the franchise on the farm. And I know how difficult it is to establish a stallion, and we put ourselves in a position to get lucky, and in this case, got lucky. So call me lucky.
Well, now you have a horse that's currently running in Europe, but everybody knows who Bobby's Kitten is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Bobby's Kitten, you know, won his comeback race the other day very impressively, and you're going to stand him at your farm when he retires from racing. And as Kitten's Joy is getting older now, one of his sons could pick up the ball and run with it.
True. Unless I get an offer I can't refuse.
Oh, no.
That never happens.
You can't sell Bobby's Kitten. He's too good of a horse.
I'm an entrepreneur and have been all my life. Matter of fact, if I don't then win the Derby, that's probably what I'm going to put on my tombstone. Like, I made a lot of good deals, but I went in a hole on this one. True entrepreneur, right?
Ken Ramsey looking to get lucky one more time here on Saturday afternoon in the 142nd Run for the Roses. Oscar nominated, going to try and get it done. And Ken, you know what? If he comes up short on Saturday, you can always point toward the Sandy Lane Gold Cup in Barbados.
That's right. That's right. Barbados Gold Cup. He's Oscar nominated, but he wasn't nominated for the Derby, but we'll get him nominated for the Barbados Gold Cup.
And we'll be there. So we'll see you down there with him. Oscar nominated to the Gold Cup next year. Ken, we appreciate it. Thanks for everything. All the best on Saturday. Go get it done.
Thank you. Could be my turn. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. Bad for a kid from Artemis, Kentucky, by the way.
I just celebrated the 10th anniversary of my 70th birthday on November the 3rd, so it's my turn.
No better time than to win the Kentucky Derby,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. All right, we're going to step away for another break. We're going to come back with more live from Churchill Downs. It's the Derby Countdown presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best, to breed the best, to race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the classic!
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Grade 1 winner Data Link by world-renowned sire Warfront. Data Link scored in the prestigious Grade 1 Makers 46 Mile at Keeneland. Then set a new course record in the Grade 2 Monmouth Stakes. With a pedigree free of Mr. Prospector in the first four generations, Data Link is the perfect outcross option His first weanlings turned heads, selling well above the stud fee. Data Link at Claiborne Farm.
Begin your assault on the Run for the Roses Mutuals with ExpressBet's Kentucky Derby Wagering Guide. It's free, informative, and available at ExpressBet.com beginning Friday, April 29th. NBC's Bob Neumeier and Eddie Olchek, Santa Anita's John White and Jeff Siegel, Daily Racing Form's Dick Girardi, and At the Races radio host Steve Vick break it down according to main contenders, value plays, and $100 wagering strategies for the big race. Plus, you get intriguing stats and trends and know this facts and figures you won't find anywhere else. Check daily guide updates and revised info following the Kentucky Derby post position draw. ExpressBet's free Kentucky Derby wagering guide and daily updates are one piece of the Derby handicapping puzzle you won't want to miss. Go to ExpressBet.com to get the guide, to open a new account, and get a $125 bonus in time to wager on the Derby.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
77-year-old trainer Art Sherman had dedicated his life to the sport of thoroughbred racing, but had never had a horse good enough to compete in the Kentucky Derby. That all changed on May 3, 2014, when an unlikely contender by the name of California Chrome arrived in Louisville, Kentucky, with an obscure pedigree which most experts believed would never hold up against the blue-blooded runners in the Derby field. California Chrome was also a California bred, and no horse bred in the Golden State had won the Kentucky Derby in more than 50 years. But as the saying goes, you can't teach heart.
It is California Chrome on the outside. Samrat runs at him with the gate pole. California Chrome is pulling away. California Chrome into the final furlong. He's got a 5-length lead on his competition. It is California Chrome in front. And from the back of the pack on the outside, Commanding Curve is taken second. But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
California Chrome's dominating win silenced his critics and provided yet another memorable moment in Kentucky Derby history.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Listening to the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
No, you always dream about, you know, the Derby, of course, no, but no, it's just it's a process, you know. It takes a while, and people to know you and knows if you can get the job done, you know. And from there, you know, we just little by little, you know, we start creeping up, and here we are now, you know. But you know, the most difficult, you know, is not to climb the mountain, you know, and make sure, you know, we don't fall off, you know, so you need to keep working hard and just to, you know, keep your head in the shoulder, make sure you work hard and focus, and just hoping you get lucky too, you know, because sometimes the luck, you know, is not in your favor. So the Kentucky Derby is definitely America's number one race. When someone you cross, you know, they meet a jockey, they ask you if you ride a Derby or if you win a Derby. They don't ask you about a Breeders' Cup race or anything like it, you know.
That's jockey Florent Giroux, one of five jockeys in the Kentucky Derby, making their Derby debut. He will be aboard Gunrunner for trainer Steve Asmussen, and one horse looking to knock off Gunrunner and everybody else is Tom's Ready from the barn of Dallas Stewart. Dallas, a native of Louisiana. He was actually born in Mississippi, but has lived in Louisiana for the majority of his life, and looking to knock off everybody on Saturday afternoon. And Tom's Ready, second in Louisiana Derby last time out, and all kinds of Louisiana angles with Tom's Ready. Dallas, thanks for taking a few minutes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and by the way, what's up with the New Orleans Saints mittens here, whatever you're wearing?
Trying to convince you and try to bring you over to the other side, bro. Hey, y'all won enough Super Bowls, hey, all right?
A Steeler fan would never be seen with gloves on a gorgeous morning like this here at Churchill.
I guess. We play inside.
Hey, well, how about the New Orleans angles to this horse? Of course, owned by Tom and Gail Benson. Tom, the owner of the Saints and the Pelicans in New Orleans. Tell me about training for them.
You know, they're special people. I mean, they give back to the city a lot. And Mr. Benson was involved years ago with horses, but he got out because his son had passed away. But they kind of got the Derby fever a couple of years ago, and they put some serious money up. And, you know, they got a couple of horses in the Derby. They feel lucky, and they know They're getting a feel of what it's like. They land today, and but they want to take the trophy back home, believe me.
Well, so do you.
Yes, sir.
Dallas, how about that? You mentioned, you know, they put the money up because they got the Derby fever. A lot of people put the money up because they have the Derby fever, but it doesn't necessarily equate to getting in the Derby. I mean, what an accomplishment to get back in the game and quickly have two horses running in the Kentucky Derby.
You know, it's really hard to explain. You know, we go to the sales and buy horses. I bought three for him. One of them got injured. He's not going to make it back. And the other one, he's just an okay horse. But this horse is a special horse. So, and they got Mo Tom. He's a special horse. So, I mean, they feel very lucky. And it's a hard thing to do to get in this race, as you know, Jeff.
You said that Tom's son passed away?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Very sad.
This was like 70s. Okay. This was the latest.
Okay, right,
so,
right.
Bob, I think he said his name was.
Okay. Tell me about Tom's Ready. How's he coming into the race? What are you seeing from him?
Very nice horse. You know, he had a good winner. A couple of 3 seconds down in New Orleans. Got beat by a nice horse, Gunrunner, who I'm sure everybody kind of likes for the Derby. And, you know, we just got to get a little better. So we've trained well here. He's very sound. I like the way he's handling everything. So we'll see.
He looks very straightforward in terms of training. You know, watching him train here at Churchill Downs this week, he does everything the right way, seems to be well within himself, keyed up the right way. And so it doesn't appear that this surface or this track will be much of an issue for this horse.
No, Jeff, he's been here a lot. He trained here a lot as a two-year-old. He actually broke his maiden here. He was second in the street sense to Mo Tom. So he's been around this track a lot. So we'll see if that helps us.
You told us about commanding curve in December, long before the Derby, and he ran such a tremendous race. When did you know that this horse was going to be a Derby horse?
Well, he's a fighter. You know, he's been fighting all year long. Fought up at Saratoga. You know, we challenged him. He got outrun. We brought him here. He won. You know, he ran second to Mo Tom. You know, all winter long, he's been fighting to hold his position. You know, he needs to make a leap forward, like I said, but he's a fighter. You know, he wants to fight it out. So we'll see where he's at. Lucky enough, he's, you know, knock on wood, we stayed healthy, and he's able to compete.
You know, Dallas, we were talking the other night, and I thought it was pretty interesting what you say. You kind of keep coming after him. You can't quit, you know. And sometimes these horses, some of them are, you know, they sparkle, and they're impressive so early, and they're just so dominant. But sometimes, you know, we talked about some of the past Derby winners where when you look at their resume, they weren't necessarily the standouts, and they didn't impress,
right,
you know, early in the process. But on any given day, if you've got the horse that has the ability and you stick with it, you might jump up on the right day and win a big one.
Yeah, I mean, you always go back to, you know, things that you learned and, you know, like working for Wayne. You know, I mean, you look at Charismatic. I mean, he got this horse here. It was unbelievable. You know, Grindstone, Winning Colors. I mean, some of them weren't favorites. And they marched over there and got the job done. So, you know, my two horses were second. They weren't favorites. But we kept going. I mean, we want to be in this race. When you say, you know, what race do you want to be in? You guys want to be in the Derby, right? That's the way we approach it, you know. And then hopefully you got a horse fast enough, and now you got to have enough points. But you can't give up. If you want to make the race, you got to keep striving forward and keep buying horses, Jeff. And we'll get you in there. Now we got Kurt Becker. Let's go. Best voice ever.
Well, Dallas, back in the day, there were sports writers who would come to cover the Derby. And back in the post-war era, the 40s, 50s, they would often refer to the home stretch at Churchill as Heartbreak Alley. And, you know, we think about horses like Commanding Curve and like Golden Soul, who ran huge at very big odds of 30-1 or higher. And no doubt that's satisfying. But by the same token, you know, you've kind of become known as the dangerous guy for the exotic wagers. You'll hear people say, oh, you got to be careful of Dallas Stewart at a price in your exotics. At some point, do you grow weary of being the exotics guy in the wagers? And are you wanting to say, no, I want to be the guy in the winner's circle?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. You know, it's all about winning. And, you know, I was very proud of those two horses.
Sure.
They ran great. You know, we moved, you know, to right here to this year. This horse has trained great. You know, hopefully he'll be able to compete from the eighth pole to the wire. Because there's always a lot of them looking for the exit sign at the eighth pole. So, yeah. You know, you just got to be one of the ones that makes that other push.
Your horse is always finished, you know. But
you
it's
finish.
True, you've kind of become the Ali Dar of trainers, you know. And
it ain't over yet, bro.
No, I know. I won
43 years of the Saints, and we finally won the Super Bowl.
It's like a putt. You know, you got to get it close, and hopefully it drops in. And one of these days, you're going to drop in, and that's going to be great. But, you know, You always seem to get the horses. They're a lot like your old boss. You get horses to the Derby.
Thank you.
And that's very unusual because a lot of people try, but you get them there,
it's
and then
easy.
They run good.
Hey, and you got to stay healthy. You know, you get an injury in January or February, you're out.
That's an excellent point that Jude raises because you're not a trainer that has a string here and a string there on this coast and that coast.
We got 25 head.
Exactly. So to end
wow.
up, yeah. I mean, wow. think about the numbers and getting into the Derby on such a consistent basis these
yeah.
last several years.
Yeah,
but I trained for some very good people that have very good stock. So
sure.
I'm not saying, oh, I need 100 horses. That's not the case.
Sure.
You know, certainly numbers help you, but I have some very good people that, you know, like Mr. Benson, Mrs. Benson, they gave me money to go buy the horses. Mr. Fipke has some of the best breeding stock. West Point Thoroughbreds, they're in every sale shopping. So I've got the right people. You know, I don't have a lot of horses. That doesn't bother me. You know, I show up every day, I do my job, and I'm happy to be there. Some trainers, I mean, I don't know, they don't like to come to work. That's their business. But I love to be here, train horses, go eat breakfast, and have fun.
Well, I know you have places to be this morning. We won't keep you anymore. Enough of the second-itis, man. Go get it done on Saturday, and we'll see you in the winner's circle. And by the way, I can't believe I'm going to do this.
Who
just
that?
For you. I was going to do that. I was going to give you
no,
one.
No.
I was going to give you one.
Thank
That's
you
how
very much
I like
guys.
Dallas
thank,
Stewart.
Thank you guys for everything. Thank
yeah,
you very
good
much.
Good luck, Dallas. Great stuff, my friend. Well done. Dallas Stewart. Tom's ready, going to the post in the Kentucky Derby on Saturday afternoon. Post time for the Derby, by the way, 6:34 Eastern. We're going to have exclusive coverage for you here on the network. All of our Derby Day coverage kicking off 2:00 Eastern time. Make sure you join us and visit us at horseracingradio.net for a complete broadcast schedule. Also going to remind people that they can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. We are your home for all things Kentucky Derby. Make sure you do it right now, horseracingradio.net and at HRRN on Twitter.
There you go.
Guys, quick note. You know, we think this time of year about not only the Derby but the Triple Crown Series, and there are folks who have been coming by here on the backstretch, and a lot of times they will share Breeders' Cup memories as well. And just was wanted to pass a note along that later on today, just a couple of hours from now in Lexington, Lucy Bassett will be laid to rest. She passed away on Sunday. Of course, her husband, Ted, is the chairman emeritus at Keeneland Racecourse. But Lucy, very much involved in this game in her own right over the years. She bred a number of Grade 1 winners. Jude, she bred a filly by the name of Adoration, who was a Breeders' Cup distaff winner for the Ammerman family, and won that day at big odds, as I recall. So can't help but think of Lucy's family and think of Ted today and extend our condolences to Mr. Bassett and the whole gang.
Yeah, Lucy Bassett, she was a great lady and loved our sport. And yes, Adoration, that was a great day for my family. My brother purchased Adoration for the Ammermans, and I'll never forget taking the flowers home and putting them on my brother's front porch and taking a picture. It was a big day for us, and we'll all miss Mrs. Bassett and Mr. Bassett. There's no finer gentleman in our sport.
And darker clouds now beginning to roll in here at Churchill. They are above the Twin Spires and everything else here in Louisville, as we are expecting rain later this morning. But the forecast, as I told you a short time ago, outstanding for Oaks and Derby Day. Should be a fast main track and a firm turf course. We're back here tomorrow morning with another edition of the Derby Countdown Show, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy John's, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. But before we get to that show, we're going to bring you our exclusive coverage of the post position draw beginning at 5:00 Eastern time this evening. You'll make sure that you'll tune in on Sirius XM satellite radio, on our terrestrial affiliates across the country, and streaming on our website. That coverage presented by our friends at TwinSpires.com, as is our Kentucky Oaks coverage on Friday afternoon from 3 to 6 Eastern, and all of our coverage of that Derby Day undercard beginning 2:00 Eastern on Saturday, all presented by TwinSpires.com. And JT, just a side note there, we were at the Derby Trainer Dinner last night, as we talked about in the first half of the program, and you handed me a card after we had left there, and you said, here you go. It's a free $50 bet from Twin Spires on the Kentucky Derby this year. I thought that was a nice little touch that they had a $50 free bet for everybody that attended that trainer dinner last night.
Yes, and we're going to take advantage of that free bet.
Oh, yes, we are. So if I grab multiple cards, can I just,
don't think so. I think you're limited to one per account. Yes.
I think our colleague, Mr. Bloom, wants to lodge a claim of foul here.
You didn't get one?
I'm not sure where my card is. Yeah, I didn't see one.
Did you take home your gift bag? It was in the gift bag.
Maybe that was the first mistake.
Do you have a Twin Spires account?
I think I do.
Well, jeez, Louise, you think you do.
I think I do.
Must be nice. He drives a Bentley. He's got yeah, right. 15 horses in training. I can't afford an account. Let me check with my broker.
But I could use one of those $50 cards.
Maybe you'll open an account and then there use your $50 card. I think that was the idea.
So in the first half of the program, the Oaks and Derby horses came onto the track at 8:30 Eastern, as they do every morning. Jeff, you were trackside. You mentioned several horses striding out nicely, both on the filly side and on the colt side. Which horses, if you had to give them a grade, which horses would get the highest grade from what you've seen the past two mornings there?
I've talked about Brody's cause as being a standout on the track, and my opinion hasn't wavered. He's looked very strong out there. I was extremely impressed with More Spirit this morning. I thought More Spirit was just spectacular. Mohaman, I thought really today kind of turned the corner, if you will, really looked the part and was handling himself well. For the fillies, Land Over Sea, I thought was just the picture of health and really well-conditioned and looked the part and looks sort of like, you know, the kind of filly you would see winning the Kentucky Oaks. Also, the lightly raced horse of Dale Roman's
Go Maggie Go.
Yeah. To me, the last couple of mornings really looked well. And Exaggerator today was really, I think, I think trainer Keith DeSormo has this horse in peak shape, and today was kind of like the culmination. You know, he really was getting over the track well. He was covering so much ground, and just really, you know, carrying good coat and health, and it comes into the race the right way. And it's sort of an obscure sort of behind the scenes, below the radar horse, Majesto or Majesto, whichever way you pronounce it. Each time I see this horse out there on the track, I get more and more impressed. I mean, I think he's kind of like the dark horse that maybe can surprise everybody. It's just really a horse that looks to be training very well, and I like the way he gets over the track.
Yeah, I think it is Majesto, going back to Larry Colmus's call of the Florida Derby. And JT, you actually have liked this horse even going into the Florida Derby and have liked him all the way through.
I did. I thought he would be right there with Nyquist, and he was. I mean, he got beat a ways, but he is a, you know, developing horse, a lightly raced horse, a horse that's under the radar, been training at Gulfstream Park West, formerly known as Calder. And so he's got a lot of talent, that horse, and I think he's headed in the right direction coming into the Derby.
All right, guys, I don't often do this, but I'm going to turn the keys of the show over to you after our next commercial break. I have an appointment to go interview Keith DeSormo and his Hall of Fame brother, Kent DeSormo. Oh, we're going to sit down together, talk about the brother dynamic of being in the Kentucky Derby.
Caution, watch out for dropping names.
How about that, my buddy Keith? Did you know I know Alan Sherman? I tell you that?
How about Rolly Hoyt? You know him?
Yeah, I can text. You want me to text Alan Sherman for you right now? Talk about California Chrome. All right, guys, we're going to get to this break. We'll come back. You guys will wrap it up, and we're back tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern. But before we do that, we're back this afternoon, 5 o'clock Eastern time, with that coverage of the Kentucky Derby post-position draw, which is all presented by our friends at TwinSpires.com. Stay with us on the Derby Countdown on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 142nd Kentucky Oaks and Kentucky Derby.
Do you know how fast you were going, son?
Call me Ed.
Do you know how fast you were going, Ed?
You mean exactly?
Yes, exactly.
No, not exactly. How fast?
Fast.
Faster?
You were going very fast.
Fast is my job, officer.
Fast is your job?
Yes, sir.
What kind of job?
I deliver, sir.
What do you deliver?
The world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
I thought Jimmy John's had the world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
Jimmy John's does have the world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
So you deliver for Jimmy John's?
I deliver for Jimmy John's.
So do you always deliver fast?
I always deliver fast.
How fast?
I deliver subs so fast you'll freak.
It's not smart to freak a cop, son.
You didn't order Jimmy John's sub, sir.
So if I did order a Jimmy John's sub, when would I get it?
Now.
What if I don't want it now?
Then call later.
Or I can pick it up myself.
Or you can pick it up yourself.
Because I'm pretty fast too.
I'm sure you are, sir.
Very fast.
I believe you, sir.
Faster than you.
No way, sir.
Way faster.
In your dreams.
You dissing me, son.
No, sir, I'm polite.
Fast and polite.
Very polite and very, very fast.
Is that a challenge, son?
No, sir, it's a fact.
Let's burn rubber, kid.
It wouldn't be fair.
Why not?
You've got a fully blown V8 Camaro with slicks and headers.
So?
I've got a 10-speed bike.
I'll let you off with a warning.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery.
Order online at jimmyjohns.com. Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr. for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
Wonder what it feels like to be an owner inside the paddock before your horse races, but don't know how to get started? Contact West Point Thoroughbreds to get inside the game. You can play in a big way right away by owning pieces of multiple horses, which can increase your chances of action. West Point Thoroughbreds has been professionally managing racing partnerships for 20 years. West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com. That's westpointtb.com. This advertisement is for informational purposes only and is not an offer to sell securities.
A multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire sprinter.
It's going to be very close at the finish, and here's the wire. It's Palace, the winner.
The best son of leading sire City Zip.
And it will be Palace, the winner by 3/4 of a length. And Palace dazzles here and wins by 3.5 lengths.
Palace, due for 2016 at Spendthrift Farm. Visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Derby Countdown, presented by your Lexington area Jimmy Johns on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're into the stretch now of the Arkansas Derby, and the leader is still Gettysburg. 3/4, 1/10 and 3. Gettysburg has the lead. Creator will not get the job done. On the outside, here's Whitmore coming on. Big Changes is next, and Creator is flying. Creator now strikes to the lead. Down the outside, Sudden Breaking News is coming late. Creator of Sudden Breaking News. Creator's almost there. It's Ricardo Santana Jr. It's Creator to win the Arkansas Derby. Second, Sudden Breaking News. Third is Whitmore. Fourth is Dazzling Gem in 150 flat.
Welcome back to the Derby Countdown Show. This is Jude Feld, and we're in the shadow of the Twin Spires with Kurt Becker and Jeff Bloom. And Kurt, it's kind of been a rough year for announcers. Frank Miramonte saying, Creator's not going to do it. And then all of a sudden, next call, here comes Creator. What is going on with you guys? We need to have a meeting.
It has been a bizarre spring for those of us in the booth. Weep No More in the Ashland made that spectacular move and never got a call until her nose was right at the hindquarters of the two fillies who were leading at that point. Larry and I have discussed his situation in the rain and the slop with the Wood Memorial regarding the finish there. And you think back, given where we are, rest his soul, the late Chick Anderson, was one of the things, a marvelous race caller, but one of the things that he was most known for, or remembered for, was the call of the 75 Derby. And it was a situation where he had called Foolish Pleasure moving up the rail about the quarter pole. And then he second-guessed himself down the stretch and changed it to Prince Thou Art. And he caught it right at the wire. And he corrected the call right at the wire. He had a great line, though, coming out of that race. He was interviewed by the New York Times. And they said, how do you deal with that? He said you just have to not take yourself too seriously and move on. He said, I got a letter from a lady who was a huge fan of Prince Thou Art, and she wrote to Chick, and she said, "Dear Mr. Anderson, for about 10 seconds in the stretch, you made the Derby the most exciting race I've ever witnessed."
Jude, I noticed one thing that Kurt was alluding to, and that was, us announcers got together, and what he was referring to was, well, we had this excuse and we had that excuse. There was a bird flying by. There was a cloud in the sky.
Right.
Instead of just saying, I missed the... But the good news is it seems like the way it's going, as soon as one of the announcers has the problem, makes the bad call, somebody else is going to do the same thing in another week or two. So
the best excuse was the positioning of the booth.
the long turnaround.
But it's really funny. When we were down in Barbados in March, the announcers in Barbados were also complaining about the position of their booth. And they have a unique situation there where they – are looking at the race head on down the stretch, and they have to kind of judge how far a horse is in front and then actually guess. So the actual finish call of the Sandy Lane Gold Cup is just an estimation of what the announcer thinks is going to happen, which is a little bit tougher than your situation because you actually have a TV to watch it.
Well, and you know, last night at the Derby Trainer Dinner, they play the stretch runs of all of the major prep races, showing all of the contenders for the Derby. So they put up the stretch run of the Toyota Bluegrass at Keeneland. Well, I get a text message from Jeffrey Russell, who's our director of sales at Keeneland. And he texted and he said, "You need to remove the word grinding from your vocabulary." He said, when people go to sell stallion shares, they don't want their horse being called a grinder. And I'm thinking, man, you know, and of course I fired back some kind of a sarcastic reply, and then it dawned on me after I hit send that Jeffrey's my boss at the auction, so I may not have a job come September now.
Well, that's all right. You can always work for HR. And
here.
My guess is when somebody says remove a word from your vocabulary, probably what's going to happen is that's going to be the only word that sticks in your head, and you're going to find yourself at the eighth pole, and this horse grinding his way to the finish.
And that's just it, exactly. Jeffrey's a lot of fun, and he loves giving me a tough time, and he gives everybody a tough time, and that's just part of who he is, and it's fun to joke back and forth. But you're right. So often when somebody, and I've had that happen, when somebody comes and says, you know, you really need to quit using this word or take that one, you're exactly right. Now it's actually implanted in your brain because you're so self-conscious about it. It's kind of like this, the filly harass. This is a filly that, as a race announcer, when you see her name in the lineup because of the pronunciation, You think, oh, man, I don't want to accidentally say something in connection to the name harass where people are going to think I was trying to be clever, and they're going to say, well, that was a stupid comment. And I think that's why a lot of announcers, when she's on the card, they meet it head on and they go aggressive, and they will actually just tackle it, and they will work in a comment on purpose just to be in control of the situation.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too. The same thing happens sometimes with riders. You know, we had Corey Lannery on yesterday morning, and it was a really fun interview, and he was very forthcoming about his issues with Mo Tom in the last two starts. And last night at the trainer's dinner, trainer Tom Amos mentioned that he had a blow-up. He, again, apologized for that. But everybody in the heat of battle, actually Dallas Stewart, said to him, I probably would have been worse than he. trainers and jockeys have that love-hate relationship. We need each other, but sometimes it doesn't work out. And my biggest fear when Tom did have that blow-up was if he puts Lannery back on the horse, which he's done. Now, does Corey want to go back inside? Does he want to do it again? And that might be the winning move in the Derby.
Exactly.
Whereas the other two races, it killed him. But now, what do you do? And is that going to be in Corey's mind when he is riding the race? And I didn't want to bring it up yesterday because I didn't want to put that in his mind if he hadn't been thinking about it, which, right, he probably thought about it, innumerable times. But sometimes that's the move, right, Jeff?
There's no question. And he kind of alluded to it. And, he said, look, with those rough experiences, you just got to put it in the past, because during the course of a race, things change so fast. And like you said, the right move might be taking advantage of a hole that opens up when they're coming out of the turn. And I think Corey's, he's a journeyman enough, he's a veteran enough, and he has the confidence of the connections behind him to say, look, you just got to go out there and ride the race. But in the back of your mind, as a fan, as a handicapper, you do have to be thinking, I hope he doesn't overthink this situation, because the last thing he can afford to do is get this horse stopped. The reality is there's 20 horses in the race, and horses are going to get stopped no matter what. I don't care how perfectly you plan your situation going into that race. Horses will have trouble. They will get stopped, and you just hope for the sake of Mo Tom this time, at least, he only gets stopped once or twice during the course of the race.
Yeah, I just hope he gets to run his race. That's exactly. That's the thing. And then if he gets beat, he gets beat. But I'd like to see him have some kind of a clear trip down the lane.
And that's just it. And the next race I ride will be my first. So I'm going to put that preface my next comment by saying that. But the Derby seems like a race where you have got to be aggressive and in command. You think back when Native Dancer got beat back in the early 50s. There were people who criticized Eric Guerin, the jockey, and said, oh, he did this wrong, he did that wrong. I don't think it was that so much as Hank Moreno, who rode Dark Star, when he came out of the gate, he said, I had a ton of horse under me. The horse felt tremendous. And everybody was just felt like, oh, just better lay back and maybe try to pick up the pieces. There's no beating Native Dancer. Hank Moreno said, no, I've got a ton of horse. That was my instruction. And when I came out of the gate, I said, this horse feels too good. I'm going to go straight to the front. I'm going to be in control of this race. I'm going to make that big gray horse try to chase me down. And it worked just by a few inches, but it worked.
Yeah, there's no secret. Look, in the Kentucky Derby this year, Danzig Candy's going to go to the front. He's the speed of the race. Things happen, though. What if he breaks a touch slow? What if another horse, for whatever reason, I don't know, the adjustment of blinkers or whatever it is, decides to show some speed, and things change so fast. So I think, you know, the jockeys in the race like this, especially the guys who have the experience, they just sort of go with the flow and things happen the way they happen. And I don't think Corey's going to be in a situation where he's going to overthink, looking to make a decision that's not going to get him into trouble, because in the heat of the battle, he's just going to go for the win, and you hope that it plays out the right way.
Yeah, we can only hope that he gets a clear run, because I really would like to see what that horse can do down the stretch.
I agree.
And you know, guys, we've thought so much in recent years about the now-retired Calvin Borrell with those rail-skimming rides, and there's no question those were gutsy rides, and they paid off. But sometimes that rail, a jockey will see a spot as they turn for home. I think about Jerry Bailey on Sea Hero back in 93, Bill Shoemaker on Ferdinand when they got turned for home into the stretch, and man, he spotted an opening on the rail and bam, made that right to left move and shot right through there.
That's where Calvin learned it.
And there you go. and it takes guts to do that, though. And that's why I don't fault Corey Landry for those. You know why? Because Corey has guts as a rider, and sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, it's been a great show, guys, and we want to thank our guests. Thomas Allen Pauly, the great artist, Ron Moquette, a fantastic trainer and a good fella, Dallas Stewart, and Ken Ramsey. What can you say about him? Just turn the microphone on and let him go. But it's been a fun show. We'll see you all tomorrow here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And for Kurt Becker, for Jeff Bloom, for the name dropper Mike Penna, this is Jude Feld, and we look forward to talking to you again tomorrow.